move to the fifth case this morning, U.S. versus Terry.
May it please the Court, Your Honors.
Counsel.
I'm Attorney Don Chuning. I represent Mr. Ronald Terry. I also represented him before the District Court. The issue that's raised on appeal is relatively narrow, and unfortunately due to the standard of review is an uphill climb for me. I recognize that going in, but the facts are somewhat convoluted and contorted in how you actually get to the credibility determination, and that this is a drug conspiracy case. Mr. Terry pled guilty, subject to a conditional plea agreement that allowed him to preserve this challenge to a suppression motion to multiple Title III intercepts. Those Title III intercepts, one of which was on a phone number which I'll refer to as extension 5638.
It wasn't his phone.
It was not his phone, no. It was on co-conspirator Mark Cuby's phone. In the initial months of the investigation, Mr. Cuby had been using extension 1716, and it's undisputed that law enforcement had good reason to believe it. Towards the end of March, or early April, first few days of April 2005, Mr. Cuby stopped using that phone. There was a change in calling patterns on that phone. They were monitoring it pursuant to valid pen register and trap and trace orders.
So as far as that goes, the discovery of the drop-off in use of the first phone, the 1716 phone, you agree it is not tainted in any way by your theory that they somehow peaked it at the other phone?
Correct. I mean, I think clearly they figured out, and that
they
would
be figured out that something's up.
Figured out that something's up, and it would be our theory, like you said, that because they figured out something was up, they peaked at 5638.
But isn't it equally possible, though, as the testimony that was accepted indicates, that they have other reasons to look at 5638, and they see these same numbers, you know, the in-going, outgoing numbers that the pen register and trap and trace devices pick up?
Well,
I mean, I know that's not maybe the only way it could have happened, but as long as it's a way it could have happened, don't we have to accept the district court's factual determinations and credibility rulings?
Two responses to that. One is there's really only two things that pointed to a change in 5638. One is, and this is from the second set of testimony that we get at the December 20th hearing. One is Detective Thompson testifies, well, we knew 1716, excuse me, those call patterns changed. We think the phone has changed hands. An informant places a call to the old number, and a woman answers and says something to the effect of, I'll get a message to old school, who was Mr. Cuby, who was a former user of the phone. He then says he looked at Mr. Nixon, another co-defendant, who they also had a valid court order on, and looked at his phone numbers and saw that 5638 now shows up. And then they go back and look and see on March 31st there was a 14-second phone call between 5638 and 1716.
Right.
Now, so those are there, and if that had been what was proffered initially and as a credible grounds for how they determined 5638 was the number, I wouldn't be here. You know, the bottom line is, though, we have, ultimately this is a challenge to the credibility, because what we have are documentary evidence which suggests, again, that somehow there was access to 5638 prior to the orders, and we have this flip-flop of testimony by Detective Thompson, and that's the reason I'm here.
Well, but
the police voluntarily came in to say, hey, we screwed up, we gave you bad information, and we want to correct it. Isn't that what happened?
Well, yeah, we had a hearing on December 6th. Ms. Jacobs was there, and there was this issue as to Detective Thompson was saying we were on Terry's phone, the appellant in this case, and that's how we figured out, one of the ways we figured out 5638, and you know, we were all left scratching our heads. That couldn't be, and could you please provide the orders showing us that you were on Terry's phone? They went back, found out they weren't, and then we had this affidavit to reopen, basically recant a good portion of his testimony.
But I'm I thought, though, that in the end, the judge concludes that these mistakes in timing and et cetera by Officer Thompson are really just good faith mistakes. He's talking about things that had happened in the past and whether the call from 1716 to 5638 happens just after the call or whether he found out about it just after the call and it happened a couple of days before, and whether it was Nixian's phone or Nixian and Terry were just, I mean, eventually they get into everybody. And so he's trying to reconstruct what did I know back way then, and the district judge decides these are innocent misstatements and I don't find that they undermine the content of his testimony, that this was all handled legitimately. I mean, again, I don't imagine that this is the only thing that you could come up with, but it seems like a plausible enough account, given our standard of review on credibility.
Well, I mean, I think that's what the magistrate judge did. I mean, I think you summarized it in his decision. Mm-hmm. I mean, where I am looking at this, I have to argue that I think that's an unreasonable construction of the facts based on the fact that...
Do you have, like, a smoking gun or something?
I wish I did.
What is your strongest fact?
Well, I can tell you, this case began as a head-scratcher. I'm going through the discovery. Mr. Terry's going through the discovery. And we end up with how did they figure out 5638? And mm-hmm. why is this report that's dated a day before mm-hmm. they're on 5638 is describing 5638's phone activity? And then we have this 2703D order that says, well, we have these analysis of all these phone numbers, and that leads us to 5638. So I mm-hmm. brought the motion. Then we have Detective Thompson come in. He's either going to admit that, oh, yeah, we were up on 5638, which is not plausible, or he's going to offer an explanation of what's going on. And that explanation fails completely. He says, we were on Terry's phone. We weren't on Terry's phone. Well, we had the call to Jasmine, and then within a few hours of the call to Jasmine, there's a call between the two phones. And then we, a few hours after that, we get the affidavit and the recantation. And then finally we get to December 20th, and he has an explanation, which is basically pared down to its bare bones. We saw it on Nixian's phone. And we have a call between 1716 and 5638 on March 31st, and that's good enough. And that's what the judge accepts. Mm-hmm. And I guess to accept just that, once the officer's been painted into the corner, we think is, again, to cite the standard, so improbable, so inconsistent, as to be unreasonable for a fact finder to accept.
This is almost like instant replay in football.
Well... unfortunately, there's a pretty discretionary standard of review, too. So. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the Court, good morning. Michelle Jacobs for the United States. As Mr. Chuning just went through all of the mistakes we made, and I must say this was not our finest hour in terms of trying to reconstruct exactly what we knew and when.
Because Thompson didn't goof up once on that. He repeatedly said he had reviewed the records at the initial hearing, didn't he?
Of the Terry pen? Yeah. I mean, what he said in that initial hearing was not just, though, that he relied on the Terry pen. What he said was he reviewed the Terry pen and the Nixian pen. There was this call to the informant and so on. And sort of to, I guess, just to follow that up a little bit, when Mr. Chuning asked me at the end of the hearing for the pen register, I said, sure, I'll go get it. I mean, there was no question in my mind, there was no question in the pre-evidentiary hearing filing and so on that we had looked at the Terry pen because there was a Terry pen. But what we realized when we got upstairs and started scrambling around was that Terry pen had actually been about 2 months or a month and a half later. So there was no question we made a mistake. But I think it's important as he goes through the mistakes that we made to remember, and Judge Wood, as you said, to put it in the context of the standard of review for this court, but also to remember that Magistrate Judge Callahan knew of all this when we walked into the December 20th hearing. We had fronted the mistakes. We immediately filed the motion to reopen and the affidavit of Detective Thompson. I said, do you want to take him on cross first or do you want me to direct? I mean, we were ready to present all of this. So Magistrate Judge Callahan was acutely aware of the potential problems. He knew what the change in his testimony was going to be. He was subject to cross-examination by Mr. Chuning. Certainly, if there had been a smoking gun or even any attempt to prove an actual illegality as opposed to sort of exploit our mistakes, they had an opportunity. They could have called somebody, I suppose, from the phone company to see if we had tried to get any information early or had tried to represent that we needed an emergency pen or something like that. But none of that was done. And I would submit that given where Magistrate Judge Callahan was sitting and given what he knew going into that hearing, he was extremely careful about, as I said before, acutely aware of this credibility issue and was able to determine that Detective Thompson's testimony and all of the records that we submitted all of the raw pen data and we went through it and we showed the change in calling patterns and we talked about Nixian's pen and what he saw on Nixian's pen and the March 31st call and the like, he was in the best position to determine whether or not Detective Thompson was ultimately credible and whether the evidence, in addition to his explanation, but the documentary evidence established that we legally figured out 5638 was probably Mark Cuby's phone number. I mean, at the time that we do a pen and a trap, remember that the standard is that do we have reasonable grounds to believe that this is going to be material or relevant to our investigation, not that we know for certain who has that phone in his hand and who's talking on it. It's just a reasonable grounds to believe, and that's what he had as of April 12th when we got the orders. And I would ask, again, given that this court would really have to find that there is no foundation for the credibility findings that Judge Callahan made or for the factual findings, and the record to the contrary, I think there's ample evidence to show, yes, there were mistakes, but we cleared up those mistakes and in good faith showed Judge Callahan what the evidence was that led us to 5638. And under that standard of review, I would ask that this court affirm the judgment of the district court.
Now, there's some discussion in the briefs whether there's any way to place these devices, whether it's the pen register, the mm-hmm. trap and trace, or even a full Title III wiretap, without the cooperation of the telephone company.
There is not that I'm aware of. I have had cases just in my own background where we have needed emergency pens and traps, and what we have to do is contact the phone company and make a written representation to them, for example, in a kidnapping case, let's say, mm-hmm. make a written representation to them that there isn't time or we don't have access to a judge immediately. We need to get up on that pen because life or limb is at stake or at risk. And then we have to follow up with a court order. I believe 3125 says 48 hours, if I'm not mistaken. But that's 18 U.S.C. Section 3125. It does say that the government can install and use, but we don't have any ability that I'm aware of to install without contacting the phone company, making that representation to them about the emergency, and then they will allow us to begin to use that pen register. They essentially give us computer access to that pen register prior to the court order. But that's the only way that I'm aware that we could.
So when Detective Thompson testifies that he's not aware of any way without
the phone company, he's right. At least as far as I know, yes. Yes. So if the court has no further questions, I would ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you, Ms. Jacobs.
Thank you.
Chewing, how much time?
Very brief, Your Honor. One point that Ms. Jacobs made is what the standard is to get a 3123 or 2703D order, and I don't want to confuse that. I mean, I think clearly if Nixian's phone data and the 1716-5638 call are the evidence that was in the possession of law enforcement, although I argued differently in the district court, I think that probably meets the standard, but that's besides the point because what we're talking about is the credibility determination. We've whittled him down to that, and that's what he's left with, and now I don't think you can use a post hoc justification to say, well, that explains what they did, unless you find him credible throughout. We are challenging his credibility throughout. On that, and the last point I'd reference is the 2703D order, or application, rather. And again, that's the document along with Exhibit 1. You know, Exhibit 1 is the document that I think contradicts Detective Thompson's testimony. However, Detective Thompson says it was a typo. It really was supposed to be April 12th, not April 11th. Then you have the 2703D application, which talks about an analysis of numbers. And it's our position that when reading the record here, there's only one conclusion to draw, and it's contrary to what the district court drew, which is that analysis of numbers is Exhibit 1. Exhibit 1 is an analysis of phone numbers of 1716 and 5638. And we believe that that was then incorporated into the 2703D application. As for how they did it, I wish I had an answer. they've pointed that out, and I don't have that would be one of those black holes that I can't look into, but I have to acknowledge that, admittedly. So,
Mr. Chewing, you took this case by appointment.
Yes, I did, Your Honor.
You have the thanks of the court for your excellent representation of your client.
Well, thank you
very much. Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement. We move.